So welcome to this week's edition of the Retail Risk Podcast, sponsored by Sensormatic. My guest this week is Professor Martin Gill. Many of you will know Martin from his huge back catalogue and current catalogue of work, one of the country's leading criminologists. Martin has published numerous books, white papers, spoke at a raft of industry events, and I'm delighted that you found the time to join us today. So Martin, welcome.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the invite.
So amazing to catch up and see you here. One question I always find fascinating, for particularly for people that have got a real focus and a real strong belief in a certain area. But when young Martin was at school or about to leave school, did you sit there and think, I want to be the country's leading criminologist and a professor? Or was there another budding career that you were maybe drawn towards? How did you get into this?
More or less, and younger than that, actually, incredibly. And many people sort of fall into criminology, but I didn't. And I can remember almost as soon as I could walk and talk, I was always interested in crime TV programs. The books that I read even then were about stories about crime. I was fascinated by crime. That was the issue. It always struck me as such a scary world, you know, particularly true crime. And so I was always fascinated by it. Had I known then there was such a thing as a criminologist, I definitely would have put that high. At the time, I was thinking more about policing and prison service and that sort of role. But yeah, absolutely. It was always, always, always my interest and my passion.
So did you then, was it from, as you left school, was it into university and then on to progress all the way through and start? Was there a stop off along the way in the prison service or the police? What was the process?
No, I mean, I went to do a degree so that I could do crime. In those days, there weren't such a thing as a criminology degree. The one thing they did have, I did a social policy degree, and they had a subject called the sociology of deviance, which was sociology of crime, really. Not very enticing as it happens. So, and then I went and did a PhD in criminology, of course. So I was always, always interested in that sort of area, and I never wavered. And so, for me, it's a real passion. And the interest I've always had is, how can you prevent crime? I remember very, very young, going with mum and dad. We went for a walk one night, and we went into a sweet shop of some sort. And the lady was crying. She'd been burgled. And my dad, who's a detective, was really interested in sort of trying to help her, as I recall. And I remember being so sad that she was so upset about being burgled. And then I was always interested in understanding the offender point of view. What is it that makes someone want to risk their liberty? And how do they approach a crime? So really, I'm doing what I've always wanted to do. The catch for me is my three kids saying something like, I'm not sure what I want to do, because I always did know. And so I say, what are you interested in? And whatever your answer is, do that. And they say, oh, if only that were easy, Dad. You know, well, in my case, it was that easy.
Yeah, if only it was that easy. So, well, in my household, that means I've got a pro gamer and a globally recognisable YouTuber on the way. So let's see.
Few of those.
Yeah. 8 and 9. There's time to change. Now, look, been a you know, interesting, odd, all the phrases have been used. But what have you been doing and working on over the last 12 to 18 months? What's been occupying your time?
Well, there are two parts to my life. One is the research side. So we've been doing research. We've done a research project on the response to COVID-19, how the security sector has responded to it. And we're just about to start a project, actually, on security management in prisons. I'm doing quite a bit of work where I go with ex-offenders into retailers to shoplift. And, you know, we spoke about this many years ago, Paul. We've had an upsurge in interest in this recently. So, and it's a really, really, really big deal. You know, as I said just now, I'm interested in the offender's perspective. It's a much underused approach. And I know you've used this yourself in the context of fraud, you know. In my case, it's more theft. And so we go into retailers, we steal goods, in inverted commas, obviously we give them back afterwards. And the idea is, by doing that, we assess the crime prevention measures in place from the viewpoint of the thief. Extremely powerful, extremely informative. and we give immediate feedback. And we're working with more retailers on that. And I've got three former shoplifters working with me at the moment who are really, really good. And, you know, that's a great thing. So we've been doing some of that. And I also run award schemes, slightly different area to you, security, economic crime and cybersecurity, which have been taken off around the world. And you're going to appear on a webinar in a few weeks time. I'll be doing thought leadership webinars where twice a week, 45 minutes, free to attend, three panelists discussing a subject of interest. And we did the 126th, I think, yesterday. So they've been going on. They've been a big part of my life. And the key thing running through all this is the interest in crime prevention, loss prevention, security, fraud prevention, the idea about what can we learn about how you prevent this well. And both the research and the award schemes are really about that point.
Yeah, and I've always been fascinated, and when we've spoken in the past, with you going into prisons and the time that you get to spend with offenders and understanding this new piece of work, is that going to expand on that a little bit more? Or is that actually about the security in the prisons themselves this time?
That one's more about the security in the prisons and stuff. But we've done webinars with ex-offenders to try and find out their side of the story. And as I said, working with these shoplifters, where we're going in and you understand how they approach the offence, Paul. And it is so startling to hear how they approach these things that are designed to prevent them and stop them, you know? And there is this sort of almost common sense view. And sometimes it's said, and I'm sure you've had it at many of your conferences. Well, I know you have. We're doing this, aren't we great? We've got all these things in place. Isn't it great? And yet crime's prolific, you know? And when you speak to offenders in prison and when you speak to these, they know there's going to be loss prevention measures in place. That's a given. It's obvious. The question is, unless they're working optimally, then they typically fall short of having that impact they're supposed to have. And it's not that any of them are bad in themselves. All of them have got a role to play. It's just that making it difficult for an offender is more than just putting these measures in place. And what you do get from their side of the story is their approach, their thinking, their insights, which are extremely revealing. And then we work together to think about how we might encourage organisations, retailers in particular, of course, to make more of what they've got. And often this is not expensive. This is not about buying new measures. It's not about investing more. Often the reverse. Use what you've got optimally. And there's a lot we can do. There's a lot of good work that can be done that way.
Yeah, I mean, that sort of calling out there time and time again, just going in and looking at what's there and just reevaluating how it's used, or, you know, redeploying the guard times. I remember we did some work with a particular retailer that had this, you know, ongoing problem with theft of a specific item. And when they actually looked at it, the thefts were occurring when the store was at its quietest, yet they were deploying the guards at the busiest time because they perceived that's when the threat was. But actually, that particular case, you aligned their theft with, it was actually the drug users when they needed their fix. And that was early in the morning at the end of the day. And that was a case of redeploying the guards at that time. And fascinating, didn't cost any more, just took a different perspective.
Well, exactly. Now, there are hundreds of those, Paul. There are literally, when we go in and look at these situations, there are hundreds of examples of things one can do. And also, you see, sometimes, and the security officer on the access point is a common point, but what's that individual doing? You know, what the shoplifters tell me is that having someone there in itself is not the end of the world. It depends what they're doing and how they're reacting to you. That's where you can make a difference. And we went into one retailer where you know, they'd had the hand cleansing because of COVID right in front of where the security officer was standing. And of course, this was great for us because it distracted the security officer, distracted the person just at the minute we wanted. So all these sorts of things. There are so many things one can do that don't cost any money and are, I would say, much more effective in having a real impact at the sharp end.
Now, more than ever, retailers and shopping centres need to create efficient and safe shopping destinations that can thrive in the most challenging of market conditions. Sensormatic Solutions uniquely combines insights into loss and liability, shopper insights and inventory visibility to help you power operational excellence and deliver frictionless, secure, personalized shopper experiences while driving revenue. Visit us at sensormatic.com to learn more.
So picking up on that and going to all of the time you spent with the actual offenders, is there one or two underlying themes or opinions or thoughts? You know, you talk about, I love the term you use about, you know, people prepared to gamble with their freedom, if you like. What drives people to do that? Because many of us, you know, we'd like to think on this side of the fence could never even contemplate, you know, trying to shoplift from, you know, a busy high street store. But yeah, you know, obviously addiction is going to be one issue. But outside of that, is there anything else that you can sort of say, this is what we see?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing I would say is, and strikingly, the reason is because it's easy. And because they're successful most of the time. And that is a really, really big thing to think about, you know. But what you learn is that they rely on loss prevention measures not being effective. Because given what is in store, if they were effective, it would be a problem. But by and large, they're not effective. And these people are prolific, okay, absolutely prolific. And most of the time, they're successful. And they're able to do that because they perceive it to be easy. And most of the time, sadly, they're right. And not because there aren't measures in there, but because the measures that are in there are not really targeted on the problem. And there we have it. It sounds sort of so obvious, doesn't it? It sounds so easy. And yet there we are. Organizations, retailers spend more and more money on things that are decided from head office will be good, and mostly they are, but if they're not integrated, if they're not made to work, if they're not part of the working culture, if they're not focused on the specific problem they're trying to solve, don't be surprised if it doesn't work. And it often doesn't.
I can, as you say that, I'm just reminded of another situation where somebody thought they had a particular problem with a detagger, so before somebody explored it properly, they authorized a huge spend across a massive estate of stores, and it didn't fix anything at all. It just ended up with a very large bill because they hadn't took time to figure out what the exact problem was. So we've got the research going on. We've got the webinars and the OSPAs that you've been doing. Looking forward, we're all going to be able to leave our houses in the near future, or that's what we're all holding on to. When you join the rest of us in notionally burning your Zoom subscription, or at least downgrading it, what are you going to be doing? What are you going to be looking forward to? What are you going to be getting involved in as we get back in the real world?
Well, the first thing I think is, I suppose, more generally, more of the same, but with a perhaps a focus. I mean, one of the things I really am keen to do is my work with offenders where you go into retailers and you assess it is so illuminating, with so much potential. So we're looking to do more of that, always one thing. Obviously, research is ongoing and we've got many opportunities, and that generates new insights, that generates new findings. I find that very, very exciting. With the OSPAs, the Outstanding Security Performance Awards, this is about to announce, I'm not saying what they are yet, four new countries, already in 12, we're about to announce four more as we expand around the world. The Tackling Economic Crime Awards are growing in prominence. So all of those are ongoing. We're definitely going to continue with the thought leadership webinars as well, and looking at spreading those out to different regions of the world. So exciting times, really. I mean, in many ways, COVID-19, as for all of us, I think, provided an opportunity to rethink and in some times refocus. And, while, of course, we would never have wished it to have happened, I mean, it's quite important that during this process, all business, I'm sure you're the same as me, have had to look at what can we learn. And some of those learnings are really quite useful. And virtue is a case in point, to be honest.
Yeah, I absolutely. And I think, you know, certainly I get the impression that whereas in the past we might have, jumped in a car and gone for an hour meeting, that it might have been 4 or 5 hours out of your day. I'm now finding, in the early days of Zoom, everybody had their camera off. Now we've all got used to seeing ourselves on these little boxes on our screen, and that bit's become the norm. So I definitely think, you know, that'll stick around for sure. But I think, you know, the face-to-face has got its place without a doubt, because, you know, I always maintain people buy people. And 80% of any sale is the person, 20% is the product, is always the way I go. And I think, you know, it's easier to get that in-person feeling when you're in the same room across opposed to on Zoom, where for all anybody knows, you and I sat with a shirt on and a pair of shorts, or whatever it might be. So yeah, that you don't do. Now, I think it's fair to say the retail landscape has changed dramatically in the last 12 or 18 months. How do you see the crime landscape changing alongside that? Have you got any thoughts, insight or projections about what retailers might be seeing? Is there going to be a rush from the criminals to get back because their bank balances are maybe depleted as well? What trends do you think you can call out?
Well, exactly that. And I think we should be we shouldn't at all be surprised if offenders who've been starved of opportunities in one way return to what they know best. I mean, don't forget, what's coming through from them is that this is a relatively easy crime to commit. It provides access to goods and cash relatively quickly. And there are plenty of targets. And it's easy. It's relatively easy. Now, obviously, you can only say this in certain circles, but that's the problem. It's easy. And I mean, it's no different, by the way, when you speak to more serious offenders, those involved in, robberies, which are much less common these days. But a few years ago, I did a major study on armed robbery. And why did they choose a particular target? Because they perceived it to be easy. And of course, what offenders want are two things. They want, one, to get the money, or the goods, whatever the reward is, and two, not get caught. And there are other benefits like feeling comfortable with the measures in place and knowing you can get around them, feeling comfortable that you could get away even if you are apprehended, a feeling that even if you are stopped, nothing may happen anyway. So I would expect retailing to be face a crime wave for sure. I don't think they would be surprised either at the danger, that the risk of that. My call to be, and it's not just retailers, but retail in particular, is to think about using the measures they have already to optimal effect. That strikes me as where the real opportunity rests. You know, it is very easy to think about investing in new technologies and new ways of working and new tools and technologies in, and important though they are, and definitely nothing wrong with that. But the process of making things work effectively is much more than just that. And it just seems to me that there are so many lessons that you thought would have been learned along these lines, clearly haven't. Now, I'm not a loss prevention expert. I'm not a security manager. I'm much more on the sort of study end. But the work with offenders continually tells me this same story. They look for the easy option, and it's easy because not that there are no measures in place. There are always measures in place, but they don't worry them. And they're not a big threat. There's the danger and there's the opportunity.
Yeah. And have you got we're starting to see and read about, you know, Amazon with its sort of walk-in, walk-out stores, the self-checkout, self-scan. Have you got any insight and whether... does the criminal community think, we just can't believe our luck here? What's the, is there any trend starting to appear in that space?
No, only that point, a more general point. I haven't spoken to any offender who's actually been been a part of that, an assessment of that. Well, they're very unwise of them if they haven't assessed it in this way. I have no idea. I presume they have. You think they must have done.
Yeah.
But here's the point, you see, Paul, that offenders are out there looking for opportunities all the time. One of the things I've been doing actually during COVID is looking at the fraud opportunities in COVID, and they have been multiple. You know, COVID provided wonderful, wonderful, wonderful opportunities for a fraudster. There are so many, and they adapt very quickly. They look for easy targets. And so the minute something becomes, looks as though it can be easy, it'll be tried. And if it is easy, there we have a problem.
Yeah, I mean, you've only got to sort of read on the number of HMRC scams, even the ones that have been discovered so far with fraudulently claimed furlough through to, phishing emails and phone calls and, bogus PPE orders, which I'm sure will come out of it, let alone if you happen to know an MP that can recommend you, even more perfect. So,
and indeed, in fact, yesterday, the webinar, 126 yesterday, was on public sector fraud. And one of the things that the panel were saying, who are working in this area, is they were under pressure to deliver. Some of them were being sidetracked with other roles, and some of them were obviously working from home in different environments, less supervision from colleagues and senior managers, open to the influences at home, which were much more problematic for some than others, the need to deliver quickly, all these sorts of factors get in the way of due diligence against fraud. And well, we shouldn't be surprised, and this came out yesterday, if we don't discover a massive fraud hole in the future.
Yeah, I think this, you know, you can see, you're quite right, you know, the due diligence and the you know, checking, if you like. We've seen stories come out in the public sector, haven't we? You know, bypassing normal procedure, or, you know, or don't bother, it's only 50,000, it's only 250,000. Well, you know, that's quite a lot of money. Yeah, to start with, let alone when you multiply that by, you know, X number of departments that are all procuring incredibly quickly. And there's an argument that stuff needed to be done, and I get that. And quite rightly, you know, they had to act quickly. But as you say, you know, just such an opportunity for fraudsters to jump in.
But the key here, Paul, is this what they were saying? The key is that, yes, it's understandable they have to act quickly. But when they discover that fraud hole, are they then going to say, well, we understood you had to act quickly? Or are certain heads going to roll at the sharp end for lacking due diligence in a way that perhaps, memories are short sometimes. And they were just saying yesterday, this could be one of the dangers ahead. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, we see some of these, you know, reports, they take so long to finally be commissioned and come to bear, that at that point there's a new figurehead, there's new department heads, and they go, well, you know, my predecessor's not here any longer, but we already have learned those lessons from 5 years ago, and that couldn't possibly happen again on my watch because we've made these changes. So yeah, exactly. Standard operating procedure. Now, looking forward, obviously, you know, I think you, along with many others, are predicting, unfortunately, extra pressures for retailers from a sort of shoplifting and crime perspective. But as you get your crystal ball on the deck, on the desk, and you look out 1, 2, 3 years in the future, what are you seeing, you know, from a crime and criminology perspective? Is there any other trends that you sort of look at on the horizon and think, yep, these are going to be galloping over the hill?
Well, funny enough, you should say, Paul, because we have a webinar coming up on precisely this topic. I've got three criminologists coming to talk about this very issue. But all the evidence coming through at the moment suggests COVID was a disruptor with regards to crime. In many instances, some types of crime went down. Often it changed its profile. And of course, as we go to this thing called the new normal, whatever that is, one can expect it to move again. And I think that what we wouldn't expect is, just because it disappeared for 15 months, or at least if it changed for 15 months, it won't find its home much the same as the old normal did. And of course, when you make travel easier, you make all sorts of crimes easier. And when you can be out and about wherever you want, you make all sorts of crime easier. And when there are no barriers to interaction, you make all sorts of crimes easier. So it doesn't look good on that front. Having said that, now's the opportunity to read the road ahead, and now's the opportunity to prepare. And there's a lot that can be done. There's a lot we can all do in our own lives, in our own homes, and in our workplaces to change the odds so that it's less likely. But let me, all the evidence coming to me is crime wave on the horizon here.
Yeah, and I guess, yeah, an honest assessment, but also, yeah, very concerning for those, yeah, at the sharp end, trying to you know, protect their businesses. But I think, you know, your top tip, if you like, your call out to look at what you've got, reassess how you're using it, and maximize that is a really brilliant takeaway. And whilst we all want to see new technologies being rolled out because of the benefit they can bring, sometimes the existing ones can do a fantastic job when they're properly utilized.
Yeah, absolutely. And my point is not against new technologies, by the way. I mean, they're great. My point is that there's a tendency sometimes in the real world for the people doing the buying not to be in the one to do the implementing, not to be the one to doing the day-to-day managing. And therein lies a big gap. And certainly when I've gone in with offenders recently into stores, that's been one of the issues really about how do you make all this really work effectively? And it's not easy. I mean, that's the point, really. It's not easy. It takes an application. And of course, we know retailers are about making profits and business. Of course they are. So sometimes the process of building in this into their lives so that they are incentivized to do it needs some thinking about and needs some managing and needs some engagement. And therein lies the opportunity and the challenge once again.
Yeah, it makes me smile that you're saying about getting it all to work smoothly. It reminds me of my days on the retail side running stores. And the thought that popped into my mind was the only day that everything ever really seemed to work seamlessly and the store looked pristine and all of the measures, both security and customer facing, were on point. Was the day we had a visit from the MD or somebody on the board. And that is really the wrong way around.
Yeah. And there we have it. Yeah. And of course that's and the offenders come in every other day. So therein lies, that's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah. Not once every 2 years. Look, Martin, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
As my guest. Thank you so much for taking the time out. I look forward to joining your webinar in the near future. Best of luck with everything that you're doing. I'm sure you'll be excited to get back on those aircraft to visit the 12, 13, 14 different countries that you've now got your awards in. But for now, Martin, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much indeed. Pleasure.